It's all Bills all day. Buffalo Bills Football Friday, exclusively on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash? Call Celino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way.
Handoff goes to Cook. Through a hole to the five. Into the end zone for the touchdown. Looking to load up. Fires deep. Rainbow down the field. And it's intercepted. Taron Johnson. Welcome back. Takes the snap. Back to pass. Looking to his right. Pocket collapsing and he's down. DeJuan Smoot and Greg Rousseau wrapped him up for the sack. Pocket collapsing. Allen squirts away from it. Throws to the end zone. And it's caught. For a touchdown, Dawson Knox. Blitz coming, fires over the middle for Amari Super Cooper.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
It is Football Friday, Bills and Seahawks on the way. Late game this weekend, Football Friday brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash, call Celino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. We'll chat with Chris Brown coming up bottom of the hour. And take your calls on a Football Friday, 803-0550. Also get to who needs to just get results as part of the segment. And I've got a good trivia question for you.
Nice.
Off of last night's game.
Last night's game.
Yeah, it's off last night's game. Matthew Stafford passed an all-time great and is now on a shorter list in one department. So we'll get to that. 803-0550. Asking a couple questions this morning, chatting about it with you, about reviewing penalties because of the face mask that was missed in last night's Rams-Vikings game. The Rams get the win. They get a safety late. It was a scoring play. You know, you review scoring plays, right? But you can't review penalties.
Yeah.
Darnold hauled down by his face mask. So obviously the defensive player that did it did not celebrate sacking a player for a safety.
Yeah, he thought he was getting called.
Yes, he ran away and was upset. So, you know, it's just, it's a tough one for the Vikings to swallow.
The dumbest thing that maybe dumber than all of this, the review conversations, Belichick wanting it back then, all of it. The pool reports that they do with officials after the game are the most pointless exercises in the history of sports. The pool report. Why also, so all it is of course, hey, did you see the play? No, we didn't see it.
That's
three different ways of asking that same question. And then every time they do a pool report with a referee, it ends the same way with, is this play reviewable? No, this play is not reviewable. That's it. Every time we're asking if penalties are reviewable. This is very easy to just look up. We don't need to ask the head official, is it reviewable? No.
I totally agree.
So dumb.
It's why one of my hot takes is that the idea that officials should be available for press conferences is dumb. Why didn't you call that penalty? I didn't see it. Why did you call that penalty? I thought it was a penalty.
Yeah, because what do you want?
What else is there?
Actually, I hate the Vikings, actually.
Right, what is there to say? These referees aren't... Well, I shouldn't say that. Sometimes they are caught up in the moments of games where we've heard an NHL scandal where a referee said, like, well, I owe you guys a call. You know, he was kind of keeping the ledger on how many calls went one way or the other.
Right.
So that's happened.
Those are very specific instances.
Right.
Though.
Those are hot mics catching a guy being honest at a press conference. Referee Trey Blake on this one. We did not see it, so we couldn't call it. End of story. All right. What else do you want? What you want is someone to see it and go back and say that safety has to come off the board. The personal foul penalty was too obvious. I guess you could. This is an easy one. You know, earlier this morning, you and I kind of sparred a bit about the eye in the sky making all the calls. This one on a face mask is not any different than targeting. Hold on. The game's going to pause. We're getting a look at something. They want to see if there was a targeting call here. Face mask. Not illegal hands to the face, but a face mask. In a spot like this, that seems like an easy correction. The question is, once you start doing that stuff, how far down the road do you want to go? You know, the NHL reviews offside. They also review puck over the glass. Yeah. Why is that one that's reviewed? Because it's easy. Yeah. It's, did it go over? Was it deflected? No. There's no judgment call. It's just a penalty. So if the NFL were to take steps to eye in the sky, calls like this one, I don't think it would be that problematic. I don't think having every play reviewed and bring these games to a grinding halt and removing joy from games is a good idea. I don't need a Red Zone channel, and then also the Stripes channel, where Gene Steratore just hosts all of the reviews that are happening in the 1 o'clock windows because everything is constantly under review.
Is Red Zone maybe why I don't care about reviews as much as you do, because I just never see them?
Yeah, you probably...
Because when I'm on... You don't see them when you're on Red Zone.
If you're watching Red Zone, the game, the sport is unbelievably exciting and never slows down.
Right, there's no break.
And if you're watching just one individual game, it's, holy cow, another review, another conversation, another moment where they're going to discuss this.
Yeah. Or I have the next-gen stats cast on, and there's probably something else distracting me on the broadcast. It's really cool.
What did we say about the Bills-Jets game?
Oh, my gosh.
It was horrible. Now, what if the
being in attendance for that game, too, was the most painful thing ever? It was so bad.
What if the eye in the sky shows up and starts calling all those penalties? Hey, buddy, why don't you dial it back a couple of notches? We don't necessarily want that. So, it's to me, this is a tale as old as time. It's always where we're going to land. There are going to be missed calls. You just hope it doesn't come for you. I wish I had a better approach to it, but I really don't. I don't think there's a net gain by over-officiating and over-reviewing. I think it actually takes away from the sport. I'm not used to be here, but I'd rather be at the, you know, get fewer reviews and fewer challenges in my life, because that's what I want. I want these games to move.
I do want the teams that are supposed to win, though. That's where I'm at. That's why I don't mind review as much. I want the teams that are supposed to win when they're the most often possible. Without doing, you know, 15-minute reviews. I like where they're at now. I'm good, actually. I don't need them to expand it. I don't need them to dial it back either. I think the way they're doing it now is I'm getting more reviews than ever, but I'm getting them. The amount of time spent with reviews right now, I bet, is way lower than it was 10 years ago. Because I don't have a older official jogging over to a little tent where he's got a little, you know, 12-inch screen, and now he's going to go under the hood, and he's going to spend 3 minutes in there, and he's going to try to determine it, and then he's going to run back to the center of the field and do it. One review 10 years ago is the same amount of time that 10 reviews are now. So I'm good where they are. I don't need them to expand it to penalties. You're going to do these little changes within 10 seconds, spot the ball differently, or, hey, actually, this was a touchdown 7 seconds after the ref signaled it. Like, that's where they are now, and I think they're in a good place for me.
You know, I don't necessarily disagree, but I wonder if anyone would ever take the time to, and I would imagine nobody would, because this is a waste of time and probably a stupid point, but I'll make it anyway. The minutes per 60 spent on reviews. Like, you say it's down.
I bet it's down.
But you know what's up? Discussions. They do talk a lot more. Hold on. This isn't technically a review, but now we have a 45-second conversation at the 37-yard line with all these officials discussing what they saw. And that doesn't count as a review, but that is still a stoppage, and that is still, let's go, come on, let's play.
I think that happened more in that Jet game, though, than like the last Bill season combined.
It might have. It was a rough one.
Every time. That was the more frustrating part, was I wasn't getting, hey, like, real quick, after discussion, we're doing this. It was they were standing around arguing. It looked like they were arguing with each other, right? It looked like the umpires were, like, debating, like, no, I saw this. Well, I saw this. And they were, like, going back and forth. That game is just a mess, though. What a horrible officiated game that was.
803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Walk in the line, always about how much you want to stop and go back and look at everything that happens. Mark in Coconut Creek is up on a Football Friday. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, happy Friday. You know, you're talking about the reviews and penalties. You know, sometimes it's sort of inconsistent, because they can call a penalty, and then next thing you know, the referees are picking up the flag and they're saying, oh, there's no penalty on the play. And then for the same thing, there could be like an obvious intentional grounding that's not called. And then, you know, like 30 seconds later, they throw the flag. So I don't understand why on a play like that, the referees can't get together and say, yeah, that was a face mask. But anyways, I guess that's just what we're dealing with.
Yeah, there was a play last night, Mark, in terms of like picking up a flag. There was a roughing the passer call Minnesota was called for roughing the passer on Matthew Stafford, and then after conversation, they picked it up. And they said it was because the player was pushed into Stafford. Mm-hmm. Then they showed the replay, and what did I think? I don't know about that.
Not really.
So there's one where if they reviewed that, it would have been a minute and a half of, I see it this way. I don't know. I see it this way. Roughing the passer can sometimes be, well, very strict. That's the biggest. Isn't our biggest complaint about roughing the passer that, come on, he tackled him. What's he supposed to do?
Yeah.
Epinesa got that ridiculous roughing the passer
call. That might be the worst call of the Bills season.
It might be. If that happens.
Roger said it wasn't.
Now, if that's reviewable, what happens? That's a personal foul. Let's make personal fouls reviewable. Is someone taking that off the board?
Well, because now, in that instance, that's why I don't need that reviewed, because to me, all I'm doing is transferring one referee's opinion to another referee's opinion, just who's sitting in a different seat.
Right.
And it's still opinion-based.
That's right, which is what the calls to New York have been. That's how this all started. Let's get Dean Blandino on the line to explain this to us, right? To me, man, like, the Bills having an officiating expert, this is something the Bills have, John Perry, who works for them. And it's just, I think this slow drip, or that, however you want to say it, towards fully accepting that so much of the game is about officiating. Rules analysts bring this more. It's more about officials than ever before. Oh, we didn't get the calls right. Okay, so we're just basically going to turn over a third of the broadcast to a guy telling us whether or not the call on the field is right and trying to explain the rules. And it's not even like the ruling is tied into what that guy says. It's just his opinion. What is John Perry, all due respect, what is John Perry doing for the Bills? Is he doing what Gene Steratore does for CBS? Like, guys, I think they would call it this way. And then they go down, they don't make that call. Like, sorry.
Is he better at it, though, than the guy that was in the job before? Because they would have had somebody, right?
Maybe.
Every team's always had that.
To me, it's this normalization of relentless over-officiating. And why do we get games where the game is ground to a halt and people complain, oh, the officials thought this game was about them? It is about them. The broadcast is about them. The pool report is about them. All these rules changes on challenging penalties. Like, every conversation ends up about them. And I feel like there's probably a better way. And I know it's like not sexy, but ignoring it. Get rules analysts out of the booth.
Mm-hmm.
Move on with our lives. You might come away less upset. I don't know. That's my take on it. Gino in Amherst. Hey, Gino.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, morning.
I think there's no way that the NFL is going to give up letting us challenge penalties, because that's the way they control the game. You know, in the playoffs, when there's those long passes for pass interference, it's questionable, they call them to keep the game close. I mean, there's no way they're going to let us challenge penalties.
Well, I mean, you have to believe that they call penalties to keep games close in that case.
I do. I totally do. I think that's how they keep these playoff games always within 7 to 10 points.
I'm not. I don't know.
You're not sold.
No.
I'm not sold on that. I think the league, they play in a league with a lot of parity. That's correct. In comparison to others. Like, in comparison to, like, college football, for instance. I think that's usually more of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't believe.
I might levy that against hockey, though.
I don't believe. Well,
no, not that they would do it on purpose to keep games close, but we have proof that they like to keep the number of penalties close.
Yes.
And I feel like the NFL doesn't make the same effort. Like, I don't know. This is kind of a guess, but I feel like in the NHL, the referees know how many penalties are on each side. That they know, hey, it's 5-1 in penalties. I got to get them a call. There is evidence of that. Football, if penalties are 10-2, I don't know. I feel like that's not in their heads. Maybe I'm wrong on that. For trying to differentiate the two, but I don't think of football the same way. That, like, oh, we've got to even it up. We've got to call a penalty in the Bills here because the Seahawks have had 8 already go in their favor. I don't know. I think the sports might be different.
Yeah.
Those two.
I guess I shouldn't say I don't believe that that could ever happen. That a call. I do. I don't believe that could ever happen. That a call would be made to keep a game close. I don't believe it.
Just yeah, not, I don't. Just, I don't either.
Not at all. Could a call be made to keep the number of penalties close?
Well, that's what I just
that's a little different for me.
I still don't think they do that in football.
That can happen unconsciously or subconsciously, where, well, I've called 3 straight penalties on this team, I'm gonna find one on the other team. And listen, well, when a coach goes up to an official like watch number 62, he's holding every play, even if you, as a human, you are now primed to evaluate whether or not that guy is holding. Whereas the Sky Judge or the AI version would not be necessarily primed in that same way.
I will say it's interesting. The Bills are playing the Seahawks this week. And one story or just comments I remember Richard Sherman making years back when talking about the defense they employ in Seattle, he made a comment once about how we play very physically, and we are, maybe this was more an analysis than what Sherman said literally, but I've heard this about that Seattle Legion of Boom team, that basically they were coached in the secondary and defensively, hold every play. Illegal contact every play.
Because you dare them.
Because the refs are going to call you once or twice on it. They are not going to call you on it the whole game.
And why are they not going to call you on it the whole game?
Because they don't want a penalty every play.
Because if they called a penalty every play, what would happen?
The game would be 7 hours.
And people would be mad at who?
The officials.
Right.
Yeah. Right, they wouldn't get mad at the Seahawks.
No, they'd get mad at the officials.
They'd get mad at the officials.
How could you call it on every play? You ruined the game.
Yeah. That's, even if they would be accurate by calling a penalty every play, because that's what the Seahawks doing.
People don't want penalties called every play. They want officials to get off the field.
Yeah.
If there's a if the Bills-Seahawks game goes and there's not a single penalty played, the officials will be commended. Like, wow, they really let him play. You got to respect it. So it's a impossible job on some level just because of the way that the officials are evaluated. Joe in North Tonawanda. Hey, Joe, good morning.
Hey, guys, how you doing? I'm just listening to your show. I would like to see the penalties kind of like the strike zone. If the strike zone's wide, keep it wide the whole game. In other words, the Epinesa piece, you know, hey, if you're going to call a candy play against him, you know, make sure that the other QBs are candy plays as well. As far as the face mask, I don't believe this, and I don't believe I'm saying this, but is there any betting involved on the safety and the referees? I don't want to even believe that because I've been a longtime NFL fan, but I just want to hear your opinion on that.
Well, the Rams were 3-point underdogs in this game, I believe. Right, the Rams were getting 3.
So they were covering no matter what.
That's right. And the over-under went to 50. That might have gone over with a safety. But no. Again, it's another one of those things where I don't think there's any chance that the official, the back judge or whatever,
he wants the over to hit.
Is thinking like, I need an over here. So what I'm going to do is disregard a safety face mask. You want the over, just call a bunch of pass interferences and let them go down the field and score points.
I guess it also depends where you went, because some books had it at 48 and others had it at 47.5. And what was the score before the safety? 28-20.
Yeah.
So it would have been right on the number for some. And then it would have went over with the safety, I guess. But no. That's not why it happened.
Well, the review process and challenging penalties is more likely to be brought in with gambling than without. Like, that's one of the things that's happened here. Why do we have so many reviews? Why is it all about getting it right? Why is it about the offside challenge, VAR in soccer? The answer is that if they call it even ticky-tack while we, the viewer, hates it, someone that bet on that game, and there's been betting in soccer for, you know, a long time, long before we had mobile betting and all that here, you could go to these games and bet. Getting it right matters because there's a lot of money going back and forth in who wins, who scores.
Uh-huh.
So the increase in gambling, I believe, leads to a more meticulous evaluation of every single call and a higher likelihood that every call gets completely evaluated and broken down as far as possible.
Oh, it all funnels back to the money originally. Isn't the reason that we have reviews in the first place more because the owners don't want to lose games that way? Because they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars on players?
That's where the offside challenge came in. The offside challenge came in because Matt Duchene was offside by a foot and everybody saw it, and then the league had to ruin its entire sport for 10 years.
But wasn't that because an owner was mad about it because his team lost?
Or a GM.
While pouring assets and money into it?
GMs are terrified of losing a game on an offside call, so they just decide to ruin the sport. Anyway.
Offside call's worse than all the football ones.
It is the worst thing. Yes, it is.
It's worse than VAR?
Yep. The offside challenge is the worst thing in sports.
I can't wait till Liverpool or Arsenal scores a goal.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
On Sunday, and then it's going to be off by a millimeter, and they're going to call it back.
Yeah, see, that can't happen because Arsenal can't finish a game with 11 men. So, you know, don't worry about that first.
Yeah, red card.
Kevin and Alden. Hey, Kevin.
Hey, how you guys doing? So I'm just kind of going back to, you know, what Baltimore said last year, that they were going to kind of force the ref's hands into calling every call, you know, getting away with their holding and their pass interference and offsides. And they were going to do that every play and kind of let the refs, you know, make them honest. It just kind of goes back to that. I think the refs are now, you know, the league has kind of looked at it as, okay, you're going to do that. Now we're going to call every call, and now you're going to get what you get. I mean, just kind of curious what you guys think on that.
I mean, I don't see it. Is there an uptick in penalties this year per last year? I mean, it's the coaches' jobs to find these loopholes, like the head coach in Oregon with the 12-man defense, knowing the rule, so the call went one way, and then they changed the rule. But I could try and pull up penalties by year.
Yeah, I was trying to find that. I've got it by team, and I'll just tell you this. The team that's number one in penalties every year, it's like almost always the same number. It's like between 115 and 130-ish. So I don't think it's that different.
Yeah, I don't think they're calling too much.
They call too much in the Bills-Jets game.
Yes. Or do those two teams cheat too much?
See, that was the thing about that game is if I had watched the replays and gone, okay, yeah, that's a blatant penalty. That's a blatant penalty. That's a penalty too. It felt like that was a game where they were calling things that were just not penalties. Like they were so ticky-tack. And that's the game management of an official, right? Is, okay, you watch a play and you watch a hold and it's like very mild. Like, there's not all holds are created equal, right? That's the thing. Like, there's holding on every play, but there are not egregious holds on every play. There is not, you are grabbing a guy's jersey and yanking it while he's turned in the other direction. Sometimes there is, you got a guy by the shoulder pads, and there's a slight twist, and then you let go. And in theory, and by definition, that might be a hold, but the hold you called the play before is 50 times worse, so which one are you going to call? Like, that's the other part of this, is the referee and how much he has to determine on a game-to-game, play-to-play basis. Okay, sure. By definition, maybe that was a penalty, but it really didn't affect anything, and it really was super, super mild. I'm going to let that go. You have to be able to do that. But that's the last night's face mask penalty. Face mask is a little different anyway, but it was so bad, it was so egregious, and it was so impactful that just missing that is ridiculous. Even if there might have been a legal contact on that play. But you don't notice it because it wasn't egregious. It's the egregious ones.
Quick number for you. I'm at teamrankings.com. So last year, the league leader for a team in penalties per game was the Jets. They were penalized 7.3 times per game. This year, there are about 10 teams with more than that number.
Oh, really?
Now, will that balance out by the time the year is over? Quite possibly. But right now, the league lead is 8.6.
All right.
And Seattle, Green Bay, Minnesota, Detroit, Dallas, the Jets, Baltimore, Houston, Miami, and Cleveland are all above last year's leader in penalties per game. So something to watch.
Yeah.
That seems like 10 teams being the most penalized team of last year.
That would speak to there have been more penalties
called
this year.
That's right, for sure. Chris Brown joins us when we get back as we keep rolling through this Buffalo Bills Football Friday. You can join us and be a part of the show if you'd like to. Happy to hear from you. Football Friday brought to you by Salino. Car crash, call Salino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Zubs. Start your game day the Crosby's way.
Chris Brown's appearance on WGR is being brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. By Dunn Tire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills. And by the Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women.
As an edge rusher, you always want to get the sacks. At the end of the day, you can't be result-driven, at least for me. I try to be more process-driven, so I know if I'm doing everything right, I'm hitting the quarterback, winning my rushes, that's what it's all about. The sack numbers come. You really can't control that. It's like a quarterback trying to throw touchdowns. You know what I'm saying? You could play a good game as a quarterback and win the game without throwing six touchdowns or four touchdowns. So it's kind of, I kind of see it like that, and I try not to get too caught up in the stats, because you could have a good game and not have a sack. And I've played, and there's been games where I have one and a half or two sacks, and it's like I didn't even play my best ball, but it's like that's just kind of how the cookie crumbled on that day.
Greg Rousseau, some good process there from Greg Rousseau. Good mindset. Jeremy and Joe, it is Football Friday. We welcome in Chris Brown, Bills play-by-play man, to join us on the Western Hotline to preview Bills and Seahawks. Before we get to that, Chris, where do you come down on, you know, getting mad at officials? Does it keep you up at night? Is it the kind of thing you've accepted? Because I tend to be a little further on that, down that road of just, it's how it goes, and I'm not sure what the answers are. Last night's game featuring a face mask for a safety that didn't get called, and it's got the league talking about officiating today.
Yeah, I have done a little bit of self-help in this area. Basically, what I do is I go into a game saying they're going to make mistakes. I just, like, mentally prepare myself, because at the end of the day, refs are human, and they're going to make mistakes. The game moves fast, and their job is not easy. So I just try to tell myself they're not going to be perfect. So get ready for those, and then when they happen, do your best to just take a deep breath and go to the next play. I'll be the first one to admit that I, even with all that preparation, it's still difficult.
Yeah, last night, you know, the game, whatever, it was already an 8-point game. Maybe Minnesota doesn't have much of a chance, but it pretty much died with that call. But anyway, Bills and Seahawks. You know, there was a clip earlier this year, Chris, from the Seattle head coach, where this might have been like week two or three, when all the talk about, you know, cover two and the shells and all that stuff was happening. And Mike McDonald made a comment about how if you can stop the run and play cover two, you got something pretty good going. And I thought, here's a guy that is cut from the same cloth as Sean McDermott in this regard, right? The Bills' base defense, they love to play two safeties and try to stop the run as best they can that way. So McDonald's matchup here defensively, like, he's a first-year head coach, and they're off to a decent start there in Seattle, but it strikes me as a defense that wants to play a lot like the way the Bills play.
Right. I mean, he comes, you know, from that Baltimore coaching tree, and the problem for them is they've had trouble stopping the run. They're down near the bottom of the league. I think they're 27th or 28th against the run. So part one of his plan has not gone according to plan for the most part through the first seven games. They are 4-3, so they found ways to win games. And I think, you know, it's their number one passing offense that they have to thank for that. I was surprised by this. Not to flip sides of the ball here, but if you count Geno Smith's 20 sacks, the Seahawks have thrown exactly twice as much as they have run the football, which is a pretty big disparity. I think they're 65-35 pass to run. And they've got a good back in Kenneth Walker, and their offensive line on the edges is a little dicey right now due to injury. So it's kind of surprising to see them press forward with this passing game, but they seem committed to it.
I wonder, Chris, if they're doing that. I'm thinking of Brady's last year, maybe in Tampa, where they never ran the ball, but it wasn't even because, like, they didn't like the running backs. It was because their line was so bad. It was just, we've got to throw it and throw it quickly to protect our line. And maybe that's what Seattle's doing here, is their line, they feel like they can't hold up when they run the ball. So I wonder if it's less an indictment on Walker and more of that. And also with Metcalf maybe dealing with an injury here and maybe not playing, you might think this is a game where to prevent the Bills' D-line from just eating, maybe the Seahawks try to run a lot of short passes in this game.
Yeah, it's just, I was looking at some of their last two games. I mean, they take their shots on intermediate and downfield routes, so I don't know. I mean, I guess they just say, Geno, look out. You're going to get hit a few times, but we're going to throw it, and we're going to ride with you. And, I mean, I guess it's worked for the most part, and from a point production standpoint. And, you know, they have receivers who we know can make big plays with the trio they have out there with, you know, Metcalf, Lockett, and Njigba. So I don't know. It's just very interesting in a year where running the football is up, like noticeably up across the league. They have gone the opposite direction. It's just kind of an interesting outlier, Seattle.
Yeah. What do you make of Geno's story, by the way? Like him being in this game like 10 years after we probably last were thinking about him regularly with the Jets, that he's like went away for 7 years and now is like, I think, a pretty good starting quarterback.
It is crazy to think that, you know, that's the second quarterback off the board in the E.J. Manuel draft class. I think those two for me are always going to be tied together for whatever reason, but I always marveled at how different he looked in college at West Virginia in comparison to how he looked with the Jets. And I think he's finally getting back to that freewheeling, throw it all over the yard type quarterback that we saw in that wide open offense at West Virginia, for those that can remember that far back. But kudos to him, man. He completely resuscitated his career. And he's a legit starting quarterback in this league. I mean, I'm not putting him in your top 7 or 8, but he's probably somewhere between, I don't know, 12 and 15. I mean, you can win with the guy. I think that's been proven for the most part. So be interesting to see if the Seahawks can kind of take the next step here. They're in a favorable position in the division with San Francisco stumbling out there in the NFC West. So it's going to be a race out there. So they've certainly got plenty of incentive to keep pushing forward here.
Chris Brown joining us on the Western Hotline. We're still not exactly waiting for Josh Allen's first interception. One would expect it will happen one way or another. But, Chris, how much do you think Allen's protecting of the football has been about him, has been about Brady? You know, it's a team effort here to make sure they don't turn the ball over, something Allen has done in the past and gotten away with to a large degree, I think. What do you think the primary reason is that they've been able to keep him clean in that regard?
I think part of it is some of his decision-making. I think he's matured somewhat in that, in not putting the ball in harm's way as much. It was interesting. I was poring over some statistics this week, and he has had 10 turnover-worthy passes this season. And I think we can all remember a few through the course of the first 7 games. You know, he's frustrated at the end of the first half in Houston, throws a gift to a defensive back, and he drops it. There have been a couple others like that as well. So there's a little bit of luck in there, too. But I do tend to think that the law of averages is going to catch up with Josh, and eventually those will come, hopefully not in bunches. But I think he's matured a little bit in some of his decision-making. I don't feel like he's put the ball at risk too much, particularly down the field with low percentage passes, you know, double coverage, things like that. I think that's where he's kind of taken a step forward in where he's going with the football.
Did you catch our trivia earlier this week, the 5 stadiums Allen has not yet played in?
I did not.
Oh, this is one.
You're going to put me on the spot?
No. If you want a quick run at it, you can take a run.
Well, I know he didn't play in San Francisco because that game had to be played in Arizona during COVID.
Right.
And for the same reason, what are we looking at? So Seattle, that would be the other one. And then who else was the NFC West home game? Oh, no, he's played in SoFi, so that's not right.
Yeah. I'm trying to reach back. I think Carolina was another one.
The other answers,
right?
There's two more that are because of schedule. Atlanta and Carolina come up next year. And then the other one is a game he missed due to injury, which he will play later this year, Indy. He has not played in Seattle or Indy, so we'll check those boxes this next couple weeks.
Yeah, I appreciate the assist there.
But a big test. I mean, you know, for a first-timer to go into Seattle, I mean, this is it at least has the reputation of being the one that might be the toughest to play in.
Yeah, interesting conversation we had on One Bills Live earlier this week. We had Seattle radio color analyst Dave Wyman on with us, and he offered this up unsolicited. We didn't even ask him. He said that in his estimation, the home atmosphere is not as hostile as it's been in previous years, in his opinion. And I was like, all right, is this guy just blowing smoke here, like trying to set us up, or, you know, but he said, no, like the first few home games, he said he's noticed a discernible difference in the atmosphere, in the noise, and the constant din that he had become accustomed to. He's like, there in years past, there is literally no let up in the noise, like as soon as the opponent gets the ball. He said, and I just haven't experienced that this season. I mean, who knows? It could change in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
But I felt like it was a setup, so we'll have to see.
And we'll see how many Bills fans are able to make the trip
very
as
quickly.
Well.
Is this only your second trip to Seattle, Chris? Because it's only been like two game road games in 20 years.
Yeah, I was there in 2016 with the ridiculous Dan Carpenter at the end of the first half field goal debacle. And my broadcast partner, Eric Wood, got injured in that game. I think he broke his leg again and had to exit early. So I was there in 2016.
Okay.
And I think, before that.
2004 is the last one before
Bledsoe to McGahee on a fourth down pitch.
Oh, yeah, I was there for that.
Okay.
Cheeseburger game.
The cheeseburger game. The malarkey took him out for cheeseburger game. Yep.
And then in 2000, we were actually out there in Husky Stadium while they were building the new place. And that was Doug Flutie's last game as a Buffalo Bill in a driving rainstorm.
Okay. Good.
All right. Well, safe travels, and we'll be listening.
All right. Take care, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Chris Brown on the Western Hotline. His appearance brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com, by Duntire, official tire dealer of the Buffalo Bills, and by Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women. Have some instant trivia. Have the Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy. Who needs to get results? Plenty coming up. We'll also spend some time remembering some Seahawks. Jeremy and Joe. I also, by the way, and something else. Brad Marchand. You know, like that meme, the worst person in the world, made a good point.
He made a good point.
He did. He had a moment in the sun. Brad Marchand. He made a really good point. I don't know if you saw the Bruins controversy that dusted up because of a bench blow up.
Uh-huh.
So we'll get that news to you along the way as well. Jeremy and Joe, happy Football Friday. Very quickly, a point on last night's game. Vikings and Rams. You see Ryan Fitzpatrick?
No.
Oh, man. Fitz, no one's living a better life than Fitz right now. This guy is on Amazon Prime, of course, part of the crew. He wore an electric blue suit, and the undershirt was not shirt. I can't even explain what he was wearing. He is officially at gets to do anything he wants status. Fitz. It's the kind of shirt under an electric blue suit you'd say, like, did he wear that on a dare? That's what Fitz is able to do right now. You gotta love it. Gotta respect it. All right. The Super Great American Football Friday Frenzy. We'll remember some Seahawks. I've got instant trivia off last night's game. Maybe we'll lead off there. Lots to get to as we continue taking you through a Football Friday. Football Friday brought to you by Celino Law. Car crash, call Celino. And by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way.